On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Sweet Tuesday morning, came on your smile.
Tuesday afternoon.
Who told me tomorrow? Tuesday's the day.
Up on a Tuesday, got your girl in the cutting sheet Tuesday.
Sun comes up, it's Tuesday morning.
Goodbye, Ruby Tuesday. Who could hang a name on you?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you very much.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I'm the one in the middle. Thanks for being here. Have a good day. Bye. Oh, if we're only that easy, that would be great, but it's not. What kind of day are you having so far? Don't answer. I can't hear you. Don't you understand? This is a radio thing. You can't respond to me. All right. I'm having a good time, but I think I'm alone. I'm not sure. I made myself cough. All right, that's enough. That'll be enough background music. Let me introduce some of the characters that make this show possible. First, there's me. Really? And then there's the lovely and talented John Shanahan, comedy writer. Worked with him for decades and decades. My God, I've known him since before I was born. Brilliant man. John Shanahan, ladies and gentlemen. If you go to our website, newenglandbroadcasting.com, I almost forgot the name of it. There's a link to his website. Also, Jason Shaw. Oh, my God. He does the incidental music, the theme music, the whole bit for the program. Thank you, Jason. You're a hell of a guy. I don't know you really that well, but I assume you're very nice. And then there's Nicole Reed. She's the British voice that you hear at the beginning of the program. She books many of the national interviews that we do because I'm totally incapable of doing it myself. Or I don't really care to do it. And those are just some of the people. There's Ed O'Rourke, who contributes every once in a while. Contributes blood, by the way. Has nothing to do with this program. Did you ever donate blood? I could never understand that. Don't I need my blood? Doesn't that go through my body and keep me vibrant and wonderful looking? Why would I donate it? Do you want some blood? Well, sure. You got any? Yeah. Here's a few pints. Oh, thank you. I don't know. I guess blood regenerates? I don't trust that. I don't know if it does or not. I don't know if it does in me or not. I'm not donating blood. Donating an organ? Only if I work in a church. Other than that, no, you're not getting my kidneys, my lungs. I mean, I guess when I'm not using it anymore, it might be okay, but I don't think you really want them at that point. Donating a sperm? I don't know. That's just odd. That's just weird. I don't know. I know there were sperm banks, but I don't understand when the buildings are open. And I don't really would you go up to the teller? I'd like to make a donation, a deposit, okay, there's the room, here's some magazines. I don't understand how that works. Making the withdrawal, ew, Ew, wear gloves at least. Ew. I don't understand all of that stuff. I'm going to keep what I have. You keep what you have. I know that there is a need for blood. I'm not making fun of that. I'm just saying, every once in a while I have to get a blood test. Didn't do it when I was younger. My doctor now says I need to test my blood every year. It's like an oil change, I guess. I really don't understand what that is. No, a transfusion would be an oil change. I don't know. They test my blood to see what's going on in my body. Okay. But when that person comes at me with that needle and then gives me a tourniquet, it's like good things are not going to happen now. And they stick that needle into my, I hate that. I hate that. Okay. Anyway, welcome to the Ron. This has been very entertaining so far. You're talking about donating organs, giving blood. This has been very strange. I know. Let me tell you about something that really bothers me. As you know, recently there was that thing called the Academy Awards, that Oscar thing. You familiar with that? I get they call it the slap that was heard around the world. I that's a cute little phrase. I think it's a little bit of a pun. It was supposed to be a shot that was heard around the world, started wars and that kind of thing. This is a slap that started, I don't know, slapping. I don't know what it did. Will Smith slapped Chris Rock in the face, walked up on stage during the Academy Awards and slapped him. I don't think there's a human being on the planet that is not aware of that situation. Here's what I'm finding extremely odd about our society. just one of the many, actually, let me just say, one of the many things that I find strange about our society. I get it when you're watching TV and you go from one channel to the other and it's a top news story, you will see Will Smith slap Chris Rock on the stage. That is something we all saw as a little video thing. Here's the problem. When you stay on the same station, they play that slap on a loop. They play it over and over and over again. Not like now and then 10 minutes later, then 10 minutes later. No, a continuous loop. Will Smith walks up, slaps Chris Rock, sits down. Will Smith gets up, slaps Chris Rock, sits down. Will Smith, over and over and over again. And let me tell you something, that was not a slap. That was as close to a punch as you can get. Will Smith hauled off. He took that hand. He wound up for the pitch. That was a full golf swing in the face. I mean, he just, that hand was coming at Chris Rock's face at like 90 miles an hour. And yeah, Chris Rock, you're a real man, a gentleman about it. I get it. Perhaps in your mind, you're saying to yourself, I probably shouldn't be insulting people so much. This could happen. But whatever the reason, you don't hit people. I get it. We've talked about this before. You just don't hit people for any reason. Unless they hit you first, even then someone's going to get in trouble. But you don't get up and do that. Will, stupid man, he lost it. I get it. But also, Will, you live with the consequences. This is going to be on your... This is going to be on your tombstone. It's going to be your epitaph. Will Smith, he was an actor, and he slapped Chris Rock in the face in public on TV. It's going to follow him. And there may be some people that say, I don't like Will Smith anymore. I'm not going to go to his movies. That's going to hurt Will Smith a lot, believe me, because... movie producers are not going to go, let's get Will Smith so that some of the audience doesn't show up. Nah, it's not going to work, Will. Anyway, what I'm complaining about is that constant video loop that come over and how many times. So we're all condoning violence, yet we sit down and we watch it happen over and over and over and over again until it's drilled into our heads. It's funny, and it's not. every time I see that video clip, I go, oh man, you know, aren't we beyond showing that? And if you do, just show it once and then do your little talk. Do you have to have it going on constantly in the background? Oh my God. That's like brainwashing, isn't it? I don't want you to do violence. No violence. I'm going to brainwash you. Watch this over and over and over again. Come on, man. Come on. Isn't the human race smarter than that? Answer is obvious with a negative response. All right. If you want to show video loops on TV, make them wonderful things, like people hugging and kissing and lesbian sex. What the hell did that? Where did that come from? No, I'm kidding. That's a joke. Let's see some nice, soft, peaceful things in our lives. Why can't those things be on video loops? A person cuddling with a dog in a respectful manner. You know, spooning can only go so far, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Man's attachment to animals has become greater than man's attachment to man. And I don't mean that in a sexual sense, man to man or woman to woman, any, you know, whatever your combination platter may be. I'm talking about we've such a fascination with animals. We just love them and they love us back. And many of us are realizing that's a better connection than you have with people. Dogs don't argue. They'll bark here and there, but they don't really argue. People, handful drama, forget it. But dogs, holy crap, man. I mean, our relationship with dogs has just really hit new heights.
Aww.
I know. Animals, too. It's interesting. I've said on this show so many times, I've had a struggle all my life with eating animals. People eat steak, they eat chicken, they eat every animal. There are those that choose not to, and they have various titles involved, where they just don't eat meat or any product from the animal. Any product from the animal is probably not healthy for you, but it's a damn bit better than eating the animal itself. You know what I'm saying? It's one thing to suck on a woman's breast when you're a child to get breast milk. It's another to kill the mother and eat her flesh. So, you know, there is a distinction between the two. It's interesting how we refer to these things. When people say, I like chicken, I'm going to have chicken tonight. I'm going to have fish tonight. We are naming the actual animals that we're going to be eating. That's like nomenclature-wise a little too direct, because we don't say, oh, I bought a nice, nice, nice cut of pig. I'm going to have pig tonight. No, we call it pork. And when you call it pork, it doesn't sound so bad. What'd you have last night? Pork. That's okay. It sounds okay. But what'd you have last night? A pig. That doesn't sound right. Yeah, you know, we went to this restaurant yesterday. They had the best steaks. Yeah, last night I had cow. You had a cow? No, I had cow last night. I had chopped cow on a bun. No, you had a hamburger on a bun. You had beef. That's right, I had beef. I had a 2-pound slab of beef last night. Well, that sounds better than saying I had a 2-pound slab of cow. You see how it's better to just not say the actual name of the animal because it's a little strange. It's a little much. So we soften the blow. But with chickens and fish, we don't soften the blow. We just, that's what I ate. I had that animal last night for dinner. I always find it funny. There's a restaurant down the street from me, and they have eggs in the morning for breakfast, and that comes with a waffle and chicken. And I'm thinking, wow, you're really like you're like maligning this chicken to the you're eating the animal itself and the eggs that come from within. You're kind of like filling the whole plate with that animal. I don't know how healthy that is. Anyway. Now, that's been a struggle. I mean, I don't want to eat animals, yet at the same time, I mean, I was brought up eating animals, and I guess most people change. Obviously, I don't. But it does bother me. It does continually. I've talked about this before. My parents used to take me out for... when I was growing up, lobsters weren't that expensive. Really not. They were just another food. And the seafood restaurant, they had lobsters in a tank, you know, in a fish tank. And you would go up and you would point to the lobster and they would take this this strange little claw at the end of a pole and remove the lobster. And that was the one that you chose. I mean, how archaically medieval can you get?
I shall sentence this one to death. It has maligned my family and given my family a bad name. Seize that lobster that I'm pointing to and take it to the chamber for torture.
And then, you know, they bring the lobster in the back and then they drop it in boiling water and you can hear the lobster screaming. I don't know if the lobster's screaming or whether it's the sound of its shell. It's disgusting. And then they bring it to you on a plate as a lobster. The head, the feelers, the claws, fully intact. And then I open up the lobster with various implements and tools, like I'm a carpenter, and I'm cracking the skull of the thing, and I'm opening it up, and I'm eating things out of its belly. I mean, come on, man. I am physically eating crustaceans from their original form. I don't think there's anything more disgusting than eating a lobster. It's so archaically barbaric, it's unbelievable. But you know what makes it palatable? Hot butter. A little bowl of hot butter. It's like the lobster's getting back at us. Are you going to eat me? Tell me how your cholesterol is now, fat man. And then we go as far as to put a bib on. Oh, God. You don't go to a fancy restaurant and put a bib on. What are you, 2 years old? No, it's just that this is a sloppy thing because it's like going to biology class and dissecting an insect. Its guts are going to spill all over you. So you have to wear a bib. And what do we have on the bib? A picture of the animal that we're eating. What the hell's wrong with us? What the hell is wrong with us? Have we not evolved into something a little more civilized than that? I mean, come on. I don't know, man. I don't think we've evolved at all. I think we've devolved. Yeah, there's still wars. There's one going on now. And there was one a year ago. And there was one 100 years before that. And there's always a war somewhere. Civilization, my ass. We're not civilized. Never were. Don't kid yourself. Yeah. I don't know. You know that evolutionary chart of, you know, these animals walking more upright and then you have the human being. I think we reached the pinnacle. Now we're going backwards. We gave up on evolving. Now we're making robots and artificial intelligence things to take our place. See, that's the end of the line. That's we're evolving, but it's not flesh anymore. It's machines. That's wow, man. This is a weird time. This is a weird chart we're looking at. All right, my guest is going to join us momentarily, but before that happens, oh, it's going to happen. You don't have to listen to it, but it's going to happen. Before we do that, we're going to take a quick little break.
Hi, this is world-renowned hypnotist Carl Brugenheim. I've performed hilarious group participation hypnosis shows at venues all over New England. And now, I'd like to announce I've finally realized a lifelong dream. I've opened the finest seafood restaurant anywhere on the South Shore. It's called Suggestions.
Suggestions.
And you're going to love it. You are going to love it. You're going to love it. We've got lobster, we've got clams, we've got freshly caught haddock, and we have a baked stuffed shrimp that will absolutely blow your mind. But you don't have to believe me. Listen to some testimony from some of my recent customers. What do you think, Larry Verville of North Bridgewater?
I love Suggestions. They have a baked shrimp there that absolutely blew my mind.
How about you, Kristen Harris of Brockton?
I love Suggestions. They have a baked shrimp there that absolutely blew my mind.
Suggestions is located at 522 Bertram Road in Hingham. Just take Route 17 north from 98, get off at exit 9, and hang a left at Deuce Hardware. What do you think, Mitchell family of East Bridgewater?
We love Suggestions. They have a big shrimp that will absolutely blow your mind.
Suggestions. Make reservations for Friday night right now. Make those reservations. Friday night. Friday night's when you want to go. Friday. You will go Friday. Friday night is when you're going to go to Suggestions. Friday. Friday night.
Suggestions.
Erin Hillerith joins us now. She's VP of Communications, and we're talking about responsible driving. Is the pandemic driving us to drink? That's an excellent question. How are you today, Erin?
I'm doing okay, thanks, Ron. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I guess many studies have been done on this fact that alcohol consumption has gone up during the pandemic. Seems kind of obvious, but are the numbers staggering?
You know, in certain ways, yes, but having lived through it, I mean, it was a difficult time, unprecedented and ever-changing, so very uncertain. So the numbers did go up. However, 18% of parents said they actually drank less or stopped drinking entirely.
Oh.
So I think more and more people were just consuming alcohol differently. And one of the most pressing things is that people were drinking more in front of their kids.
Yeah. Well, because we're all at home. With this, you couldn't go out
absolutely,
to the bar.
Absolutely, right. Yeah. You mean you can't go out to your happy hour, you can't
right.
go out to your dinner and drink.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's an interesting conversation, is what do you tell the kids? And sometimes you don't have to tell them anything because they observe and that's how they learn, actually more than hearing words, I would assume. Do you think we were sending an odd message during that period of time?
I think it really depends. And I know that that's probably the answer that not everyone wants to hear. But if we look at it as an opportunity, and as long as we're drinking responsibly within the home, yeah. it's an opportunity to show kids how to drink responsibly. Now, of course, if you're drinking as a form of coping with stress,
yeah.
that's something that you may want to reevaluate on your own. But if you're drinking because you're sitting down making dinner, you're enjoying a movie,
right.
it's a really great time to actually involve your kids in a conversation about what responsible consumption is.
That's for sure, because, you know, we've spent many generations telling kids don't drink and don't do drugs and don't do this and don't do that, and yet we did it right in front of them. And I guess that mixed message really just kind of canceled itself out, because kids are, when they get older, people do drink. It's a social thing, and et cetera. So I guess it's not to tell them not to do it. It's how to do it responsibly and do it right.
That's right. And I mean, obviously you want to make sure that your kids understand that underage drinking is illegal. So that would be probably the first thing to discuss with them when you're trying to teach them right from wrong, when you're trying to teach them about your own family values, whether you drink within your home or you don't drink within your home for whatever reason. If your family has a history of alcoholism, that's another conversation to have there. But I think mostly the fact that the conversations are happening and the fact that kids are listening, and what you said is so perfect, kids are watching their parents. So if they see them react negatively because of stress, that's teaching them, this is how you deal with stress, kiddo. But if they're teaching them, when I'm stressed, I'm going to go for a walk, or I'm going to call my best friend, that's really teaching the positive coping mechanisms and proper decision making.
I can't tell you how many people I know or how many interviews I've done where somebody has an alcohol problem and they immediately say, my father or my mother was an alcoholic. And it's almost like it's hereditary. Blood-wise, it may be, but it's more psychologically hereditary. They kind of repeat. So it is a very serious situation.
It absolutely is. And for as much as responsibility.org wants people to drink responsibly, we know that for some people, that means not drinking at all. Because alcoholism does, in fact, run in families, and it's something that people have to be really careful about. And that's why those conversations matter so, so much.
Some people, when they even just have a drink socially, it doesn't take much for them to for their personalities to change. I personally hate that. Even when I drink socially with other people and they start becoming different people, that kind of scares the hell out of me. It's almost like a bipolar kind of thing. Children watch and see this. Is that a deterrent to them, or how do they react to that? How would one parent explain to a child that your mother is different now because she's drinking? I mean, do you explain that?
I think that it definitely has to be part of the conversation, because if kids are seeing something, it's time to talk about it.
Yeah.
Whether it is alcohol, whether it's drugs, whether it's bullying. I mean, you can go as simple as that.
Yeah.
But the real thing to do is to try to be prepared and try to have those conversations early. So what you mentioned about when people change, I mean, when alcohol touches your brain, it changes things.
Yeah.
And when alcohol touches a underage brain, it changes things differently. So our whole program, our underage drinking prevention program called Ask, Listen, Learn, it teaches kids exactly that. So what the brain does, what alcohol does to it, and what that does to them.
Yeah.
And it also goes into talking about why their developing brains should not have any alcohol in it.
Right.
But adult brains, because they're fully developed, can. They can handle a reasonable or a responsible amount.
Right. The program Ask, Listen, Learn, is that the essence of it?
Yes, it's science-based. So it takes underage drinking on in a different way than any other program. So it really talks about the science behind alcohol and the developing brain. It takes kids on a journey. It's animated videos. It's very easy to understand and absorb. But then it also teaches them these really important lessons that I think over the pandemic, we've, of course, embraced mental health and mental health preservation and all of these social and emotional issues that kids have had to navigate. They're kind of built into the Ask, Listen, Learn program. So things like decision making, goal setting, navigating negative forms of peer pressure, because that's all part of the conversation about preventing underage drinking as well.
Erin, I mean, you couldn't choose a subject that would be more significant to a parent. When that child gets out of high school and probably goes to college, a parent is like freaking out because we're sending them into an environment where people drink, where they're experimenting, they're reaching an age where they can drink, they get in the car, they can drive and drink. It's just like, it's a scary time for a parent, much less for a child.
I think you're right. I mean, my children are much younger than college age, but they keep saying it doesn't get easier, it gets different. And I 100% agree with that. And I think in the same way, the conversations that we have with our kids from the moment they're babies until the moment they turn 21 or the moment they get married or, until any moment, it's all about the conversations. It's all about being open with your kids as much as possible. And quite honestly, when kids go off to college, like you said, they're technically adults. They're 18, but legally they're still not allowed to drink.
Right. But they do, and they will.
Parents aren't quite done yet.
Yeah. Well, that's, whether they, I don't think they care about the age thing at that point when something's in front of them, unless you've raised them properly and communicated properly. Where can we go for more information?
Yep. For more information, of course, you can visit responsibility.org or asklistenlearn.org. And April is Alcohol Responsibility Month, so the perfect time to start these conversations if you haven't already.
Erin Illerith, thank you so much for your time today. Well, that'll do it for me today. I will be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. I hope you join me at some point tomorrow. Whatever. It doesn't have to be at any particular time. I'm always here. I just sit here waiting for you to listen. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace.